And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, we are in the second rain delay of Rays history at home. How does that
feel? I never thought I'd see the day. Shout out to anyone that went last night and got that cool commemorative poncho that said, I was here for the first official home rain delay in franchise history. That's a historic moment.
It is.
May they be few and far between, but it's just a weird thing to say that we're currently talking about a home game that's in weather delay right now. I don't think I like it.
No, I don't care for it really at all. But what I do care for is all of you who are joining us. We appreciate you spending this rain delay with us. Hopefully it won't be too long. I was looking at the radar. It doesn't look too bad. So hopefully it won't take forever for the game to get started. But if you are looking for something to do, this is the place to do it. We're going to be talking the week that was in Rays baseball. We're going to do bat and arm as we always do. We got some thoughts on some bullpen decisions that were made throughout the week, where the team is at kind of in the standings, where we're at going forward. Can this team get to another level? We're going to talk about it all this week. We are not ones to shy away from the difficult conversations. We have them on this podcast, and we hope that you will have them with us. Feel free to hop on YouTube and drop us a comment if you so desire, because we're going to get right into it. We ended last week live on the pod, closing out a Yankee series win, which was huge. I mean, considering what happened in the next three games, I cannot imagine the state we would have been if we had lost that series to the Yankees and then gone into the Philly series.
Yeah, that was a really big win, a really fun one for the live watch along. I had a great time. We had some great people on. We had Ben, we had Carter, we had Eureka, all kind of cycling through. It was like a bullpen game for the RBLR podcast. And yeah, a huge win and a really enjoyable win to take two out of three at Steinbrenner North. It was absolutely huge, aided in large part thanks to a great start by Taj Bradley, who I thought was really, really good. Maybe his best start of the season so far.
Yes. And we will hear more from him later in the pod, but critical to get a good start from him he has been a bit of a wild card. Really, since last July, he's really been a wild card. And so to see him starting to put it together a little bit to begin this season is so important, as we're still waiting for Shane McClanahan to get back from injury. Having him be able to be consistently contribute in a way that allows us to win baseball games. I don't know that he's not usually the guy that's going to get through a whole outing unscathed. Seems like a run or two always seems to trickle in off of him. But if you can give me six with two earned runs, I'll take it all day.
Yeah, 100%. And we just need him to keep delivering. We came out of that Yankees series with such confidence that this might be the turning point for this team. Something that we've been saying after every good series, pretty much since the start of last season. Yeah. And a familiar story where we go, oh, huge series win. This will be the turning point. Hopefully we can get something against a really, good Phillies team, but we're at home for it. And then we get swept. Yep. We get swept at home by the Phillies, and we finish the series worse than we started it.
Yep.
Before the Yankees series.
Yeah, and that's tough. And I got to say, I'm gonna say some things that I don't usually say on the pod, and that's, I'm going to criticize Kevin Cash a little bit, because I don't really agree with the decisions he made regarding the bullpen to open the series. If you guys remember, the series started in game one with the Phillies, where there was actually, it ends up being a loss for Rasmussen, but I thought really overall Ras was okay. Went four and a third, got out of the game fast, but he only gave up three. We were kind of moving towards the end stages of the game. Montgomery came in right after him. Orzy had a really nice two-inning outing for him. He's been really nice recently. He's had some nice outings. And then you get to the later stages of the game. It at the time was still a very close game. It was a 3-2 game at that point, a one-run game. And with going into the eighth, so you got two innings left to get. You're at home as well. The Rays ended up getting two more runs in the eighth and the ninth. So you would have won the game if you couldn't have given up any more runs. In the eighth, Cash brings in Engler. In my opinion, this is one of my least favorite decisions I've seen him make, because the next two games against left-handed starting pitching, which the Rays have not been able to hit all season long, just haven't been able to do it. So you're going to be hard-pressed. Like, you hope to get one of those games, but you're going to lose at least one, I think, guaranteed, the way that the Rays have been playing so far against left-handed pitching. So you have an opportunity. You're down one. You're at home. You go to your mop-up guy. Engler, who has had some nice outings, so maybe being a little unfair to him, but you are coming off an off day, and everybody is available in the bullpen, right? Coming off an off day. You then go to Engler. He gives up four runs, barely can get out of an inning. You bring in Sulcer in the next inning. So you kind of threw your mop-up guys out there. You'll lose that game, despite ending up scoring four runs. And so you lose that first game. Then the next two games, Boz gets blown up in the second game. And the Rays offense literally against a lefty did literally nothing the entire game. You lose that one. And despite the fact that you're in a position where you're losing and you would probably like to throw an inning eaters out there, you just used Engler yesterday and he threw a bunch of pitches, even though he only pitched one inning. So he wasn't available. So then you're throwing Uceda and Montgomery and Fairbanks. Fairbanks closed out that game. In a seven-run loss, Fairbanks is out there. And then in the next day, all those guys who threw the previous day, because it was a close game to end the Philly series, all those guys have to go back out there again the next day, which, you know, I don't know. You know, I think that guys can go out back-to-back days. I don't think that's necessarily out of the realm possibility for them to do well. But just imagine for a second if you throw those guys in the first game of this series. You pick your three of, you know, Emrod, Uceda, Clevenger, Fairbanks in that first game of the series. Then you can still throw all those guys in the last game of the series after you let Engler eat two or three innings in the middle game. And you can then use those guys, and maybe you don't have a bullpen implosion like Uceda did to give up three runs, and then we all know how that game ended, unfortunately. Just a really tough end of that series. So I may be being too hard on Cash, and hindsight is 1,000,000% 2020. But I'm not really, you know, in that situation, my thought was, you got two lefties. You got to win this game. You got to find a way to win this game. Because I didn't know that it was going to have such a putrid performance the next day against a lefty. And then they actually did okay in the last game of the series. But, like, imagine if you win that first game and then you're in that spot to win the last game and maybe win the series. And you know, instead, you lose the last game of a series in really tough fashion and get swept. Hindsight is always 2020, but yeah. I personally would have gone to my A bullpen in that first game because you're only down one run I feel like you had to start that series out with good momentum to carry you into two left-hand pitchers who you have been just abysmal against all season long.
Yeah, especially after an off day prior to that first Phillies game, you know that kind of almost everyone was available to go. Yes. But to play a little bit of devil's advocate.
Sure.
Where do you rank Mason Engler in the Rays pen right now?
Right now, I'm just going to pull up really quickly the bullpen and so I can give a. Because I mean, he's above Sulcer for sure.
Yeah. So, above Sulcer. Like, we know but he's like, below so like Fairbanks. Goes
Pete.
Yeah.
He's below Pete. I would put him below Clevenger. I would put him below. Uceda had a bad outing in the last game of the Philly series, but he's been very hot and cold.
Who
so maybe
you
say this question.
Trust more between Uceda and Engler.
I would trust Uceda only because even this season I've seen him be locked down. And, okay. And Engler has had good moments. So again, I'm being a little unfair because Engler has had some nice moments.
Yeah. So Engler's had two quite tough outings. He was bad. He kind of made the game that we watched along last Sunday turn into a competitive game because he gave up three runs.
Yeah.
And then he had that bad game against the Phillies. So he had back-to-back bad outings. Leading up to that Yankees and Phillies back-to-back fiasco, Englert had pitched 17 innings to a 2.65 ERA on the season. 17 innings, 16 strikeouts, 3 walks. That's pretty good.
It is good.
I would say that's... Would you say that's more or less reliable than Edwin Uceda has been this season?
I mean, in my head, I feel like Uceda has had a couple of rough outings this season. He's been kind of hot and cold. I think he's either been great or he's been bad. So, I mean, you could maybe argue that Uceda has that Englert's been more reliable than Uceda. I'd be okay with that argument.
So then, I guess, in the eighth inning, you would have to go to Clevinger, right?
What I would have done. I would have gone to Clevinger. Yeah. And I would have gone Clevinger or Fairbanks. That's what I would have done.
Would you have put Fairbanks in if we were still down a run in the ninth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have. But again, maybe that's why I'm not the manager of the Rays. There's a lot of reasons. Maybe that's the reason why not. I just think when you're at home in a close game. Now I might have put in, if I'm Kevin Cash, I probably put Emrod in the ninth if we're down a run, to be honest. But I rate Emrod just right next to Clevinger. And he's young and he's had some blowups, but I rate Emrod up there with Clevinger right now. And so I would have probably put Emrod in with the idea that we could tie it in the bottom and use Pete in the 10th. That would have been my thought process, but I personally,
he's had two back-to-back bad outings. I am being a little unfair to Englert, but coming off a bad outing that, like you said, let it get close. I mean, it's tough because there is that idea of just go right back to your guy when he has a bad outing to get him back to his confidence. So I can get behind that, but I don't know. I just really feel like this first game in that Philly series was important. And I feel like once we lost that game, we kind of lost the next one and then had to figure a way in the last game to get it back. I don't know. So it was a tough series.
It was a tough series. I think so. Englert's three that he was due to face was Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber. I definitely think Clevinger might have been the better option then, get that lefty-on-lefty matchup. But I guess it's always, but then if he came in and threw a 1-2-3 inning, we would have called it a masterstroke.
It's true.
So it's one of those things where it's easy to look back on things. I mean, yeah, it's easy to look back on things and go, would have done that differently. I think it felt bad at the time, though, as well.
Yeah, I just feel like it was trying to get a little too cute.
Right. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of it. There was some, I don't think it was even baseball. It was another sport. I feel like I was watching where I watched a coach try to get too cute. And I think coaches do that now. Like they, whether it's with the analytics or just, they find ways to try to get things over, get a little too cute. And a lot of times it blows up in your face. I feel like in the critical moments of games maybe it's the wrong mindset to think we got to win this first game, because if we don't win this first game, we're going to lose the next two. That's probably not the right mindset to manage a baseball game with. But I mean, again, this is why I'm a fan and not a manager of a Major League Baseball team. But I just feel like it would have been so critical. You mentioned it in the beginning, momentum, getting that moving in the right direction. It would have just been really nice to get moving even further in that direction, if possible, to start the Philly series off well. But hindsight is 2020.
Hindsight is 2020. I think what was more embarrassing is that we got completely shut out in the middle series. Like, no matter what we did with the pitching, we were not going to win that game, because you need to score one run at least to win a baseball game.
We did not do that.
The one that really sucks for me is that 7-6-1.
That was a hard game to watch. That was a you hard know, game to watch.
The copium will be once it gets to extras, it's kind of a coin flip. But we were up 4 runs going into the eighth inning. That's the thing that sucks.
Yeah. And being up 5-1
going into the – yeah, it's just tough. And again, like, you go to USADA. I wouldn't have done – and this is – this, you know, I don't know that I would have done anything different in that scenario. You went to USADA to get the eighth inning. You were obviously trying to go USADA Fairbanks. And right. You used Clevenger the previous inning. Pepio gives you a good start. One run given up, six innings start, really nice start from Pepio. Clevenger has a good inning, and then USADA just can't get it done. It's just tough. It's just tough.
The problem is like who there's no one that we could go, well, why isn't this guy picked? Like, why isn't this guy on the roster? Why isn't this guy an option instead? Like, we're getting Cole Salsa innings because we've got no one else. We're a bit strapped. Luke says if Walls was called safe second, we probably win.
That is very fair. And I did think he was safe. I thought he was safe.
Yeah. Yeah. That was tough. That was tough too. And that again comes down to like, you lost the coin flips.
Yep.
Oh, it was a frustrating one. It was a real frustrating one. Do we have the Phillies at all the rest of the season?
I'm going to have a quick scan. I don't think so. While Pat's having a quick scan, thank you, all of you. Good. We don't. Good. But thank you, everybody who's watching along and joining us during this rain delay. We appreciate you guys. You may have noticed that Luke just chimed in with a thought on what we're talking about. Anybody who's watching, you can give your shot at that as well. Head over to YouTube, drop a comment over there, and you have a shot to be on, and we'll talk about what you have to say. We'd love to hear from you guys. What we'd also really love is if you guys are enjoying the show, which we hope you are. Do us the biggest favor you can and drop us a subscribe on YouTube or follow on the social medias. Let you know you enjoy it. It'll let you know when we're going live. It's free. It doesn't sign you up for anything, but it just really helps out us, helps out the show. It would mean a lot to us if you would do it if you're enjoying the show.
Definitely. We are also not facing Texas for the rest of the season, which is also great news. So yes. Two of our bogey teams, we don't have to deal with them. No more.
Yep. And you know, as much as that series was a downer, I feel like what has come after that, the Brewers series, is the reason we were talking about this before the show. It's the reason I will never give up on this team, and I'll almost never. I mean, I stuck with the team all the way through. I still believed all the way up to the last week of last season because this team has fight, has grit. 2-1-run game wins. In the last two
can
games,
we continue to talk about Taylor Walls? Because I feel like we can't talk about this Brewers series without talking about Taylor Walls.
No. The thing about Taylor Walls, his value is almost like feels almost separate from the conversation surrounding him. And the problem is I think the majority of the majority of people, myself included, a lot of the times, I have a hard time associating good feelings with someone who I feel like I don't want to see the bat off their shoulder. I would rather he just leave it there and not move his bat. And I think he'd be a better player if he left it there. However, we saw this last year, or I think it wasn't last year. We saw it the year before in 2023, where Walls was like at a 110 WRC plus for a month. Like during the hot start, Walls had a kind of a crazy hot month. He's got some stuff in it every once in a while. He'll have a streaky month or something where he'll be pretty good. And I think what it goes back to is as much as it's it doesn't feel like it all the time, he's got good process to the way he does at the plate.
Luke's 100% right.
He puts it perfectly. Walls is everything right except when ball touches bat. I agree. He has good plate discipline, doesn't strike out very much, but when he puts the ball in play, it's 9 times out of 10 on the ground or a weak pop out. But this week, he's been putting the ball in play and putting it in play in some critical moments, driving in some runs, and he's been good on the base paths. And even that one that he got caught stealing, I think we all agree he was safe. So he has been as much as we dislike watching him swing the bat, he is elite in the field and he's good on the base paths and he is good at the plate with his plate discipline. And you can't, I feel like it's unfair because we do dog him a little bit sometimes on this show. I don't think everybody dogs him a little bit. So I do feel bad about that because he is a valuable part of this team. But as much as we might dog, we're going to give him his flowers because he's earned it.
Yeah. And, you know, what won us that first game of the Brewers series? A Taylor Walls bases loaded walk.
Yep.
That drove in what proved. Yeah, and that proved to be the winning run in that game. And then Taylor Walls drove in a run in the second game of that series with an RBI double. So we won that game by one run. So Taylor Walls, like, we're not gonna speak out of term here. We're not gonna say he's a good hitter, right?
Right.
But like, he is not. He has a place on this team and is a valuable role player. The problem is right now he is forced into a role that is bigger than what he should be getting, right? And that's because, and we'll sound like a broken record here, there's a certain player that used to wear number 5 for this team that ruined how this team was meant to be set up the middle for the next decade. And you don't plan for the guy you sign a 12-year extension to disappear in year 1 of the extension. You don't plan for that.
It's hard to imagine sometimes.
Yeah, lots of people will want to hear this, right? Top 5 position players on the Rays this year in terms of Fangraphs WAR. Johnny Aranda, number 1. Mm-hmm. Jake Mangum, number 2. Jose mm-hmm. Caballero, number 3. Cameron Meisner, number 4. Taylor Walls, number 5. Taylor Walls has more WAR than Yandy Diaz. Because Yandy Diaz has struggled and doesn't play defense. Junior Caminero plays so-so defense and has been so-so with the bat this year. Taylor Walls, elite defense, bit under par with the bat, more valuable according to Fangraphs. Brandon Lau, way more valuable than him. Like, Taylor Walls is currently a top 5 position player on this team. And that's not necessarily a good thing. I think that speaks more to the struggles of Yandy and Lau and Junior and Morel not quite getting stuff together. But Taylor Walls has done his part, I would say. As like we said, we want Taylor Walls to be around an 80 WRC plus hitter and play his regular defense. And we'll call that like good from Taylor Walls, right? Like that's like an optimal outcome from Taylor Walls. He's on a 74 WRC plus on the season, so slightly lower than what we'd want, but like definitely not the floor.
And he's when he does that, he's a 2 to 4-ish somewhere in there win player.
Right.
He could be a 3 to 4 win player.
So he's currently on 35 games. So if he extrapolated that over a full season, he'd probably put up about 2.8 WAR.
And that's as a guy who we all agree is not the starting shortstop. And he's not the shortstop of the future. Not even the shortstop of the future of this season. I feel like all those things are true. Like we got to be truth tellers about Taylor Walls. He is sometimes a liability with the bat in his hands. He is also a value creator at every other part of his game. Like if you think if you were to like, you know, we have like the 5 tools, right? Of the 5 tools, 3 of them, he creates plus value in.
Mm-hmm. Fielding, speed, arm, right?
And then the other 2, hit and power, he doesn't create value in. But there's still value there. And if, you know, if we were to add defense on there, he also creates value in there. And some of that's in speed, obviously. But like there's some serious value in this player, and I think it's unfair to only highlight the bat. And again, we've talked about this before on the pod. We need to super relitigate it. But some of the things that he does defensively aren't as easy to notice when you're watching on the telecast. So I would recommend if you get a chance to get out to the Stein to see him or wherever else the Rays go to see him play defense, you'll start to notice the things that he does to create that value defensively. But he's been good.
I would rather have Taylor Walls on this team than Danny Jansen.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, Danny Jansen has not created value with his bat or his glove. I'd rather have the guy that creates value with his glove and not his bat than neither.
Yes.
And there are a few players, actually, that have not contributed either, I don't think. Danny Jansen's one of them. Yeah. Morel, I think. Got off to a good start, has kind of crashed back down lately on a cold streak. Seen his WRC plus fall to 100. So I guess he's been fine. But because his defense is so eh, it's like...
And Rortvedt.
Rortvedt, right. Yeah. And you could argue Curtis Mead as well.
Yeah, you could. And I mean, we can... I feel like the Curtis Mead conversation, we still got to kind of wait a little bit. I will say there was a couple of opportunities over the last couple of games because we faced a couple lefties. And he's had some opportunities against left-handed pitching. And he just... He's sitting at a negative 35 WRC plus for the past week.
Yeah.
In a week where he got 16 plate appearances, which is the only people that are having more plate appearances than him are guys like Walls, who's starting every day, Caminero, Yandy, Bilal.
Right.
So he's gotten the opportunity. We're starting to approach. We're not quite there yet. We'd like to see him get 100 plate appearances with some consistency at the major league level this season before we make a definitive statement on him. But we're getting closer, and he needs to start turning it around. Because I was a believer in him before the season. This was a tough week for me as a Curtis Mead fan to watch him, because I thought this was a week where he could maybe start to, you know, he kind of got some good things going a little bit against the Yankees. And then has not been able to keep it moving.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder if it's beneficial just to get him down to AAA, not because he like can't turn it around, but like, we just need to get this guy some reps, man.
Yeah.
Like if he's not getting reps, and like, I don't, who knows what his floor or ceiling actually is, but I think, you know, not getting a consistent run at the major league level doesn't make you better. And only starting every other game or whatever, you can't improve at any significant rate that way. Like, he probably needs to see major league pitching, but he's not going to do that in this team right now.
Well, and he kind of has been, and he's been a net negative on the team when he's been seeing this major league pitching. I mean, he's out of the lineup today. The lineups are official. They're starting to warm up and hoping for a first pitch in about 16 minutes or so. They are hopefully getting closer to starting the game, but not in the lineup today. But again, I think part of the reason we've seen him more is because I think the Rays know that. So they're trying to give him a little bit of run. And it's tough because when you get like, when you look at a guy like Meisner, who has come back down to earth a little bit, we look at a guy like Meisner, he got his chance and he took it and ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really any time he's been brought up, Mead just hasn't done it. And I still believe in him, and I still like the behind the scenes stuff with him. I still like some of that. I still think he can be a major league hitter, but I'm starting to wonder if it might not be with the Rays.
Yeah. You do got to wonder. But on the positive side, I think the pitching was really, really good in this.
It was very good.
Littell, Bradley, and everyone who contributed from the bullpen really had a really good, really good time.
Yeah, and I think Bradley, give him a ton of credit for, you know, missing 48 minutes, coming back out after the rain delay, throwing another inning, six innings, two really back-to-back great starts from Bradley. We kind of talked about it at the beginning of the episode, but if Bradley can do that kind of stuff consistently for this team, he's going to be so valuable. And like that, if he can keep doing this, it's going to make the decisions really hard when Shane McClanahan comes back for injury. Because I think – up until recently, I think we would have all thought, I mean, maybe some people thought Littell, but maybe I'm speaking for both of us, and maybe you disagree, but I would have Tajed my first down when
I wouldn't have sent a starter down for Shane, actually. I would have sent a reliever down. I would have sent someone like Sosa down, just because that allows us to move back into that 5.5.
Oh, that's fair. Put Roz in the half, or Taj in the half, maybe. I don't know.
Or Shane in the half, really. You could ramp him up slowly that way.
True. That's a good point. That's a good point. But yeah. I think that Taj has really, you know, these last two starts, it's only two starts, but we need to see more of this from him, because it's not quite the Taj of July, but he's been really good in these last two starts.
Yeah.
This is sustainable, I think. What he's been doing, this is sustainable.
we don't need him to be the Taj of July. If we could have him like just not be the Taj of like August of last year and have him like somewhere in between that, that's fine by me as our number five starter.
Yes. Yeah. So I think this kind of performance, six innings, two runs, you can give me something like that every time out. I don't care about the strikeouts. Just give me six innings, two earned runs. I'm going to be really happy. So we hope that we can close this series out, and the game's getting ready to start soon. So hopefully we'll be able to close this series out with a win. It is in some doubt because we've, you know, there's been so up and down for the team recently. But if you are looking for some consistency, there's a place where you can easily find it. And it's at shop.rblrsports.com. Promo code Flappy for 10% off all of your order there. The best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa Bay sports teams. Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, and Sun are all there. Shop.rblrsports.com. Use promo code Flappy, F-L-A-P-P-Y, for 10% off. And then once you're done, tab on over to the best Monday article in sports. I feel like it's fair to say every single week, the Rays Roundtable, rblrsports.com. It's amazing stuff every single week, different angles on the Rays, on the minor league system. Every once in a while, we get some stuff about the American League East as well in there. It's a great place to go on your Monday mornings to kind of catch up on some things that are happening around the Rays. You got to read it every single Monday, rblrsports.com, Rays Roundtable.
Honestly, this is me like going off the record. Sorry, Eureka. This is not the views of the RBLR Rays show. This is the views of Pat Davenport. But like, genuinely, I don't see an article from any other sports outlet that's as insightful, concise, and varied as the Rays Roundtable. I think it's genuinely some of the best sports writing content in baseball right now. And that's not me as a Rays fan. That's like someone that reads a lot of sports articles around lots of stuff. Like, I genuinely think someone like The Athletic would love to have something like that. And you can get it without a paywall. You can just go to rblrsports.com and read it. And
for free.
For free. And that's me not like, that's not me doing a shill. That's like genuine opinion.
It's good, man. Like it's easy to talk about it because it is really good. And it is free.
And it is free. And like, if it continues to be this good, we might have to make it not free. So get reading it now.
Get you reading it now. Get out on the ground floor before
we get bought out by The Athletic and we have to.
Got to put a $2 paywall unless you refresh fast enough on the page and then you can still read it. I didn't say that.
Ken Rosenthal will come get you. Anyway,
anyway,
let's talk about our bat and arm of the week this week.
Bat and arm of the week.
We've already kind of talked about him, so let's quickly just get this one done because we are in agreement of our bat of the week. Who is our bat of the week?
Bat of the week is Taylor Walls. Shout out to Johnny Aranda, 270 WRC plus this week. He was great. But we wanted to give it to Taylor Walls because he's sitting right there at a 210 WRC plus for the week. And he is, like we said, he's been much maligned. He's had a really nice week this week. When you talk about win probability added, he has added a lot of win probability for this team this week in a lot of different ways, defensively. And then finally, offensively, providing some value with the bat and with his plate discipline. Just a really nice week for Taylor Walls.
Every game that we have won since the Yankees watch along and both those Brewers games, Taylor Walls has played a pivotal role in us winning all three of those games. And I don't know what more you can do to qualify. I mean, Johnny Aranda had a higher WRC plus on the week, but I think in terms of influence and impact and difference on the team, Taylor Walls, man, have a week. And I think we rag on him a lot and he's a, you know, constant source of discussion within Rays community. And I think if we are going to rag on him as much as we do, which I think at times is deserved, we also have to give him our flowers as well when he does well. And he's done fantastic this week.
Yeah. Speaking of giving people flowers, Johnny Aranda didn't win Bat of the Week. Is he the front runner for Rays All-Star?
Yeah. Easy.
Right now? I mean, because he's been probably the best player so far this season, I would say, for the Rays.
Yeah, I would say so. I think it's so hard for any Rays position player to get on the starting lineup just because you've got to win a fan vote to do it. Yeah. But Aranda for DH in the All-Star game, it's he's got a real shot. I mean, would Aranda go down as a first baseman or a DH in the All-Star?
I wonder, sometimes in those, I feel like maybe I'm wrong about this. I feel like sometimes players are available for multiple positions. Like, I feel like I see first baseman and DH is available kind of for both votes. So I wonder if maybe between the two of them, he gets enough votes to find his way into the lineup, maybe either as a reserve or I don't know if I just don't. There's very few Rays starters that ever make it in.
I'm just going to double check how many games he's played at each position this season.
I feel like he's played a good amount of first base.
I think so too. So let's see here. In 2025, he has played 33 games at first base, six at second base. None at second base. That was last year. So he's played only at first base, 33 games at first out of the – yeah, all his games have been at first base, I think.
Yeah. He's playing. I think when he's playing first, they've got Yandy at DH for the most part.
Oh, here we go. 33 games at first, one DH game.
One DH. Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been. I think he'll go down on the ballot as a first baseman.
Yeah.
So I think for a future show, we gotta take a look at American League first baseman.
I'll come back to that.
And see how he stacks up. In fact, I'm just gonna tell you right now. Okay, amongst qualified first basemen, okay? I'm going to read you the top five qualified first basemen in WRC+. Plus.
Is this for the AL?
For the AL.
For the AL, okay.
And number five, Tyler Soderstrom, 144 WRC+, plus, 0.2 FWAR.
There's a lot of talk around him to start the season.
Yeah, he's been pretty good. Vladdy Jr., 169 WRC+, 0.3 FWAR.
Mm-hmm.
Vinny Pasquantino.
Mm, yep.
171 WRC+, 0.3 FWAR. Nick Kurtz.
Nick Kurtz.
Yeah. 182 WRC+, 0.2 FWAR. So keep in mind that Nick Kurtz was number two. And he had a 182 WRC+. Plus. Keep those numbers in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Johnny Aranda. 270 WRC+. Plus.
Wow.
Although, I've just done that whole thing, and I've realized my...
Was that for last week?
That I was still set to last week.
I was like,
Let me change it. Let me change it real quick. Johnny Aranda still leads American League first baseman in WRC plus and WAR. He has a 180 WRC plus for the year and a 1.3 FWAR. He leads in both categories among American League first
baseman. Who's number two right now?
Spencer Torkelson.
That's going to be tough. What's his WRC plus right now?
148.
Ah, man. And it's because clearly Aranda's better, but I feel like Torque is going to get the votes. Because he's been a prospect. It's been a big deal that he's turning it around this year. But Aranda's, like, objectively, if you look at the numbers, better. And I wonder if he has more home runs, Torkelson does, than Aranda.
Let me see. Torkelson, yeah. Torkelson has 10 to Aranda's 5.
Yeah.
And Torkelson has 32 RBIs to Aranda's 17.
Yeah.
So I think Tork is the favorite.
Yeah. But the reality is Aranda has been doing all that while not starting every day. They'll give him a day off every once in a while against lefties, which I think is coming to a close very soon. By the way, I think we're gonna see Aranda as he is very, very quickly gonna be like, you can't keep him out of the lineup. You just cannot. He's got to play every day. He is no longer a liability at first. He is the best. He's the best all around hitter right now at this very moment on the team. He's got to be in there every single day.
Yeah, 100%, 110% even. I think. Yeah, he's the best, and I guess Paul Goldschmidt might be in that conversation as well. He's had a pretty good year with the Yankees so far.
Yeah,
he'll
get a lot of votes too as a Yankee.
As a Yankee and already established name, right? But Aranda needs to make that roster somehow, somewhere.
Yes. He does. Speaking of rosters that people are going to be joining, arm of the week.
Yeah, we're
split. Where we're going next. We are split this week. So, Pat, who is your arm of the week?
Okay. So, my arm of the week, I'm keeping it nice and simple. It was the guy that had the best start this week, and that's Zach Littell. Littell had a really, really good start against the Brewers this week. Was instrumental in that win. Six innings, just a couple of runs allowed. Really, really good for a guy that, like, struggled a bit in April. Wasn't his, like, top self. He really came through and came up with a big performance and led all Rays pitchers in F4 last week. So I'm going to give Zach Littell the arm of the week. And it's a much-deserved one.
Yeah, it's much-deserved. He's a guy that is, you know, there's been some discourse around him. Discourse around him. One of my favorite words in fantasy discourse. Around him to begin the season. He's had a couple of rough starts here and there. People calling for him to be sent down in Joe Boyle, who, by the way, has been excellent down in AAA, to be called up and to replace him. But Littell has continued to go out there and give good starts. He has these really, really good starts in him. He's just a really solid starting pitcher. Deserves the arm of the week. Really happy for him to have a nice start and continue to kind of be moving himself in the right direction.
Yeah, and we like to see Zach do well.
We do like to see Zach do well. Big fan. He doesn't spell his name right, but he does everything
else. But apart from that, yeah, he can't spell, but boy, can he pitch.
He can pitch, and I can't. So I guess it works. I guess, you know, balances out.
So who's your arm of the week if it isn't Zach Littell?
My arm of the week is, and longtime viewers of the show may know that I often like to give arm of the week to relievers because I feel like they sometimes are not as appreciated and they don't often put up the same amount of F4. The reliever I'm picking only put up 0.1 F4 behind Pepio, who also had a nice start. So shout out to him and Zach Littell. But he did pitch in four games. He did get a save. He did pitch in four games, four innings pitched, all of them, and gave up zero runs. It's the closer, P. Fairbanks. And there was a specific reason I wanted to give him the arm of the week, besides the fact that I thought he was really good this last week. And it's kind of a question for you. Where do you rank P. Fairbanks all-time in closers for the Rays?
All-time Rays closers.
Okay. Rays closers.
So let me just try and stack up the list of who else I would compare him with. Mm-hmm. So I guess you'd put Grant Balfour up there, right? Like, he was a big deal for us. Who's I guess Sergio Romo did it for a little bit, Fernando Rodney. Okay, good name. So yeah, because Rodney had that legendary season that one time. And does Uceda count from last year's Uceda? Does he count as a Rays closer?
I'm thinking more not necessarily like individual seasons. I'm talking about like careers, like think about their careers that they've had with the Rays.
The Rays have never really stuck with a closer for a really long time, except Pete Fairbanks.
I'm getting there.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe just because of his longevity, maybe number one.
So here's another kind of a thought on that. There's a couple other guys to throw in there. Roberto Hernandez, the first Rays closer from the inaugural season in the first three seasons with the Rays. Danny Baez as well. Had several really nice seasons with the Rays. And I bring his name up specifically because he is currently tied with Pete Fairbanks for 71 saves all time in fourth. Behind who would you guess? Behind Roberto Hernandez is number one. He started with the Rays and he's number one with 101 saves. Who are the other two?
Grant Balfour and Fernando Rodney.
Right on Fernando Rodney. Fernando Rodney, Alex Colomé.
How did I forget Alex Colomé?
I knew that there was one that I was like, I could see it in your mind. Like, there's one I'm forgetting. Colomé is number two with 95. Rodney's number three with 85. P. Fairbanks is at 71, tied for fourth. So, I mean, as soon as today, he could be solo four. And that would put him 29 saves behind Roberto Hernandez for the all-time saves lead in Rays history.
Wow.
And one more little question for you. Who do you think has led the Rays in saves the most consecutive seasons?
I feel like you're setting me up for a Pete Fairbanks stat here, but
maybe
Yeah, it's got to be, right? Like, Roberto Hernandez and Danny Baez, I'm sure, like, had a couple, like, a three seasons here. Maybe Colomé. Maybe Colomé did it, like, 4 years in a row.
The only – so there's a couple that did it three. Hernandez okay. did it three. Rodney did it three. And then Baez, I believe, did it two. He okay. just had, he had two really nice seasons. Pete's done it four. And I am shifting this a little bit because in 2021, he tied with Jason Adam for the most saves. Right. But he did still technically lead the Rays in saves, tied for the lead.
Sure.
But yeah. if he finishes this season, he'll be the only Ray in Rays history to end four consecutive seasons with the most saves. The only Ray in Rays history. And he has been averaging the last seasons. He's averaged about 24 saves a season. He's at eight already to start the wow. season. So there's a real chance that he could get close. I mean, he could be at number three before the end of the season very easily. He's only 14 saves back of Fernando Rodney at three. And then he's got another 10 to catch Alex Colomé. So if he finishes this season out, he could absolutely be in that number three range. And then if they keep him around for the season, which they have a club option on him for 2026, we could be looking at potentially the new saves leader. And the reason that I bring up this, and if you are sitting at home saying you disagree with Pete being the best race closer of all time, your argument probably is the best ability is availability. And you kind of need your closer to be available. And he has been hurt. And some of the 24-ish saves has been injury relating to him. However, I think in an era where the Rays have really gone away from the traditional closer, leading up to Fairbanks' tenure, there really was no traditional closer. It was all kind of, you know, there was a few guys that were getting more saves than others, but there wasn't a traditional closer. Yeah. It was by committee. For someone to come in and take that role over and lead the team in saves so consistently and to be that guy shows you how special of a pitcher he is. And I think it deserves being called out because, you know, I don't know how many people would think of Pete Fairbanks as one of the all-time Rays, but especially if he finishes this year out as a saves leader and he comes back next year, then he'd be at 5 years consecutive saves leader. There's a really good chance he would be the all-time saves leader for this team. I think we need to begin. He's not there yet. He's got to get there. He's got to get there over these next two seasons. He's got to stay with the team. But if he does, I feel like it's time to have the conversation of where does Pete Fairbanks rank among all-time Rays?
Right. And I fight this battle a lot where people think the Rays golden era was like 08 to 2013, right? Like the first run to the World Series, that run under Joe Maddon. I would argue 2019 to 2023.
I agree.
Is the real Rays golden era. I think, you know, you could put Brandon Lowe in that conversation with Carl Crawford. You could put Yandy Diaz in that conversation with Carlos Pena. You can put, some of the other all-time great contributors. I guess the only guy that you can't really make a comparison for is Longoria.
Yeah, but there hasn't been that guy since he left. So
right, exactly. So, yeah, I think... And Fairbanks is a key part of that kind of golden yes. Rays era from 2019 onwards. I love that. I love that whole stat blast about Pete Fairbanks, but not stat blast. Please don't sue us, Effectively Wild.
Because, and I think it's a really good point to put out, because when you look at the 2013 to 2017 Rays in that kind of bubble, coming from 2008 into 2013 and beyond, Colomé was kind of the guy for some of that time. And he's also an all-time great Ray. I think Colomé has the most saves in Rays history in a single season with 47, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe Hernandez did more. He led at least the American League 1 year in saves, which is pretty cool. But I think he's got the lead. Roberto Hernandez did 43 in 1 year. So he was also very good. I don't think that Pete will ever get to that high level, but I think some of that is the way the Rays play baseball now, and some of that is his health. But I don't know, the way he's been pitching so far this year, if he could stay healthy, maybe he could get to 30. Maybe he could get to 35 right. saves on the season. That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be really, really cool. Would you have rather had the past 5 years of Pete Fairbanks or the past 5 years of Nathaniel Lowe? Because that was the trade.
Oh, not even close. Not even. I mean, Nate Lowe's been fine. He's been pretty good. He's had some nice moments for the Rangers. It's not even a conversation.
Right. Yeah. One still with the team, one isn't.
Yes.
Right.
Really yeah. easy.
So last thing I want to say before we get out of here, because the Rays game has started. Rasmussen went 1-2-3 in the top of the first. Nice. We just want to talk about the week that is upcoming after yes. this mm-hmm. series wrap up with the Brewers, where they hopefully sweep them. We then go on the road for six. We got the Blue Jays and then the Marlins, who we've seen. Mm-hmm. We've had the Marlins number, it feels like, since the dawn of time. the Marlins are starting to put a few things together. They're not like as completely hopelessly lost as a franchise as they have been maybe the past few years or so. They're certainly yeah. starting to see the vision, but they're still not. They're still, you know, probably the worst team in that NL East division. Maybe the Nationals, like, but they're in a really tough division. So you'd want to capitalize some wins against those guys, but they've got some good pitching. And then the Blue Jays, they're kind of like the Rays, where they've got some expectations, but they're really struggling to kind of get out of first gear, break out of 500 hell.
Yeah. And I think that Pam would like to tell everybody that she believes that the Rays are going to have a great week this week. She thinks that they're going to go win both those series. She has a lot of confidence. And I think that we should have as much confidence in the Rays as Pam does. It's funny that we kind of feel like going on the road is an opportunity right now for this team because of the way that Steinbrenner Field has treated us over the past couple of weeks. It feels like going on the road is an opportunity to get something going, which is going to be really interesting. This is a long conversation maybe for in the future. But the back half of the year, we got a lot of road games. Is that going to be a more profitable period of the year when we're on the road more?
It shouldn't be, but the Steinbrenner is weird, and I think for me the jury is in on Steinbrenner, and I hate it.
Jury is in. We don't like it. It's terrible.
It might be a great place to go watch a ball game. It looks like a great place to go watch a ball game.
It does. It does. I've been there before when it was as a minor league stadium. It is a nice place to watch a baseball game.
But yeah, the wind plays such a factor, and the Rays have not figured out how to like make the most of how to play well at Steinbrenner. So I bring back the trot, please. I miss it. Also, Chandler Simpson lined one to center field. It looks like Eddie made it into a double, pretty convincingly.
He's so fast. He's had a little bit of a rough go over the last week. I think he had like a 43 WRC plus or something. He's definitely feeling some growing pains, but it's undeniable what a weapon he is. I don't know what the decision's going to be when J-Lo, that's maybe one thing we should mention before we go, is that J-Lo is playing some minor league games and is hopefully going to be back with the team. There's potential for him to join us in Toronto. We'll see, but right. he's moving back towards playing baseball. It's going to be a tough conversation. Unfortunately, I feel like Meisner has cooled off a little bit, and it might be a good time for him to go and continue to get run every day in AAA.
What about Jankowski?
Yeah, I guess Jankowski could go too.
Walk-off hero yesterday, I suppose.
He was a walk-off hero yesterday, yeah. which we appreciate. And he has had some nice moments. I don't know
if he's going to get much better, though.
No, but that's the thing about Jankowski, though. Is Jankowski can sit on the bench. I want Meisner playing every day. So I would rather send Meisner down to go play every day and keep Jankowski on the bench.
It's going to be weird when we have two Josh Lowe's on the same team. We just got two. We got two. We got a spare Josh Lowe.
We got a spare. We got Josh. We got Josh Lowe and Josh Lowe at home. On the same
yeah. team. Yeah. So, yeah. Let's go. I think that's all we got to say is hopefully the Rays can like string together a good road trip this week and mm-hmm. we can like start to break out of this kind of win some games, but then lose that many games straight away after.
Yep. And hopefully this at-bat that is currently ongoing with Brandon Lau goes well and we can get some momentum in this singular game, find a way to get a sweep to get through this series and then see what happens after that. But I'm feeling good. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm never going to give up on this team. They're a gritty team. They fight for their wins, and you know we love them for it. And we hope that you
are enjoying the show and loving us. And if you are, do us a huge favor. Drop us a like, drop us a subscribe, drop us a follow on the socials, wherever you consume us the most consistently or anywhere else too. Helps us out so much. We really appreciate it. And we're going to be here all season talking Rays baseball. We hope that you'll join us. We hope that you'll throw your comments in over on YouTube. This has been a weird season already to start. It's probably going to continue to be a weird season. But here, it's always going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.